Warning, you are about to listen to a life-changing session of the Think and Grow Rich Global Mastermind podcast. Any mind-blowing income, health, happiness, and otherwise earth-shattering testimonials of total transformation are not meant to serve as a guarantee of what will happen in your life as you continue to plug into this podcast. Rather, they're meant to give you an idea of what's possible. Bear in mind, results are not guaranteed, they are earned. Be forewarned, common side effects of listening to this podcast may include increased mental alertness, random and unexplained feelings of joy, a crystal clear sense of purpose in life, spontaneous outbursts of laughter, obscene amounts of new and exciting monetary deposits, and other ridiculously awesome symptoms of living a purpose-filled life. Please enjoy the show.
You are incredibly special. Do you know how few people actually go to the mirror and look deep within themselves to improve as a person, to improve as a soul, to actually question their own character and make the changes necessary? Stephen Covey said, be patient with yourself. Self-growth is tender. It's holy ground, and there's no greater investment. What's up, moneymakers? This is Mahara Tucker in Atlanta, Georgia. And you're on the Think and Grow Rich call. Our talented founder, Mr. Paul Hutchings, will be with us shortly. But for now, tell us your name and where you're calling in from.
Kathy Early from Idaho.
Good morning, Kathy Early.
Good morning.
Aloha, Mark.
California.
Hey, Elliot in Arkansas. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Who is that in California?
Lola Michelle, California.
Hey, lovely, how are you this morning?
I'm up.
Right
outside.
This is Richard from Arkansas.
Hey, Richard.
Up with him.
Carrie from Arkansas.
Is that Carrie?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning and welcome.
Morning, Carrie.
Morning, Pop.
Morning, Pop. Love it.
Good morning, Megan. It's Amy in Las Vegas.
Hey, lovely Amy. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mahara. It's Adele from Long Island, New York.
Good morning, Adele. We're glad you're here. And who is that in Texas?
Thank you, sweetie. I'm glad to be here.
Dan McCoy, Bethel, New Jersey.
Megan from Arkansas.
Good morning, Mahara. Andre from Jacksonville.
Hey,
morning, Peggy.
Good morning, Mahara and family. Jennifer from Bermuda.
Hey, Jennifer. Good morning.
Good morning, Mahara. It's Charity from Bronx, New York. Happy Freedom Friday to you.
Hey, Charity. It's Freedom Friday, and I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Who else is shaking it up this morning?
Good morning, Mahara. This is Lionel Gabriel from Detroit. Good morning, family.
The big voice from D-Town. We're glad you're with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Good morning, Richard, Dawn, and Linda from Dallas, Texas. Good morning, family.
Hey, Dawn. Good morning, Linda.
Jerusalem, how are you?
Jerusalem, what's going on?
What's going on, baby girl?
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, baby. We're doing all right up here.
Happy Friday.
Hey, can I
have a... Happy Friday, girl.
Good morning, Mahara. This is Danny.
I'm on the 14.
Hey, Danny. Good morning.
And 8 sugar. We can put some sugar on the back of the side. And then a hash brown.
We're going to cut it to our 6, or we're going to do the rest of the business.
Good morning, y'all, from Minnesota.
Hi, Mama.
Hey, Minnesota. What's going on, Jacqueline?
Shahida from Cincinnati.
Hey, Shahida. Good morning.
Lisa Scott, New Jersey.
Lisa Scott, can you feel the freedom in the air, my friend?
I can feel the freedom, Mahara.
No, you can't.
I can feel the freedom. I sure
can. I can feel the freedom.
Hi, Issa from D.C.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm thankful the Lord woke me up this morning.
Me too. Alicia, I'm so glad you're with us. It's going to be a great call today, guys. Who else is with us? We're getting started in just about a minute.
Dodala, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mahalai Manuel from Dallas.
Hey, Manuel, good morning.
Good morning, calling from New York City.
We're so glad you're here. Good morning.
Good morning, Mahara, Larry Coates, Boston.
Hey, Larry.
Good morning, Christy, Fort Lauderdale.
Good morning.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is fantastic, fabulous, fired up Friday, August 21st, 2015. This is Paul Hutchings dialing in, beautiful Southeast Idaho, excited to be on the line with each of you, still fascinated every day when I dial into this call and hear so many amazing, powerful, beautiful, influential, inspirational, power-packed, dream-filled people on the line gathering together from various locations all throughout the world here on a conference call so that we can learn and grow together, so that we can lift each other up, so that we can help each other remember that we do have power within us. We do have greatness within us. We can take positive steps and action to move forward to create better futures and better destinies and more of all the good things of life. I love the fact that we're here to remind each other of that and help bring out the best of what's on the inside. So I'm excited to be here on this fantastic, fabulous, fired up Friday. I want to know, are you excited for that as well? And if you are, let's give a freedom yell for Freedom Friday as I unmute the lines right now.
Everybody better be fired up this morning. Well, we are going to do it on this Friday.
Oh, yeah.
That dude, I got paid.
Yeah. It is time to get excited. Oh, I appreciate you guys for doing that. Really injects a virtual dose of adrenaline into my heart and soul when I hear everyone just being excited about life, being excited about being here. You know, it's actually pretty easy to get excited. Todd Young taught me how to do this. He says the three steps for success in business are step number one, get excited. Step number two, you got to get excited. Step number three, you got to get excited. So if you ever want to get excited, just say, I'm excited because, and then start filling in the blanks. I'm excited because I'm alive. I'm excited because I'm on this conference call. I'm excited because I get to associate with people around me who earn more income and have more freedom than I do. I'm excited because I get to study books from people who have scoured history and gathered up the best golden nuggets and diamonds to leave behind so that I can walk along in my journey and pick those golden nuggets and diamonds up and put them in my journey. I'm excited because I'm married and I've got children and I love my family. I'm excited because of that. I'm excited because of freedom, the freedom that I have right now in my life and the freedom that I'm continuing to create for the people around me. I'm excited about all those things. And any one of us at any point in time can just start to list the things that we're excited about. And odds are, as we do that, we will get more excited. We'll get more inspired. We'll become more grateful. And as we all know, that's one of the keys to living the good life. So in any case, let's jump through it. Let's go through our definite major purpose self-confidence formula. And then we'll get on with the content of the call. We're going to read a fascinating story today. So I hope you're all ready. One second here. Who has that ready for us? Star 6 and come on out if you've got that.
Richard.
Who's that?
Hi, Paul. It's Jennifer from the computer.
Okay, I didn't catch the name. Say that one more time.
Jennifer from Bermuda.
Okay, I heard two people. I heard Jennifer come through a little bit louder. So, Jennifer, go ahead and do that. Jennifer from Bermuda, welcome.
Okay, thanks. My major definite purpose. This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it, partly because it is the first day of January 2016. And I have in my possession, which is coming to me consistently through, in exchange for this money, I am given the most efficient service of which I am capable, rendering the fullest possible quantity and the best possible quality of service in the capacity of. I believe that I have this money in my possession. My faith is so strong that I am seeing and always will see this money before my eyes. I am touching it with my hands. It is being transferred to me at this time and in the proportion that I deliver the service I am rendering for it. I have a plan by which to accumulate this money, and I am following this plan as it is being continuously enhanced and received. Self-confidence formula, in unity and in the spirit and synergy of our mastermind. First, we know that we have the ability to achieve the object of our definite purpose in life. Therefore, we demand of ourselves persistent, continuous action toward its attainment, and we here and now promise to always continue to render such action. Second, we realize the dominating thoughts of our minds will always reproduce themselves in outward physical action and forever transform themselves into physical reality. Therefore, we are concentrating our thoughts for 30 minutes daily upon the task of thinking of the persons we are becoming, thereby creating in our minds a clear mental picture of those persons. Third, we know through the principle of auto-suggestion, any desire that we persistently hold in our minds will always seek expression through some practical means of attaining the object back of it. Therefore, we are devoting 10 minutes daily to demanding of ourselves the development of self-confidence. Fourth, we have clearly written down a description of our definite chief aim in life, and we will never stop trying until we shall have developed the ultimate self-confidence for its attainment. Fifth, we fully realize that no wealth or position can long endure unless built upon truth and justice. Therefore, we are engaging in no transaction which does not benefit all whom it affects. We are succeeding by attracting to ourselves the forces we wish to use and the cooperation of other people. We are inducing others to serve us because of our willingness to serve others. We are eliminating hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and cynicism by developing love for all humanity because we know that a negative attitude toward others can never bring us success. We are causing others to believe in us because we are believing in them and in ourselves. We are signing our name to this formula, committing it to memory, and repeating it aloud once a day with full faith that it will always influence our thoughts and actions as we are becoming self-reliant and successful persons. Signed, sealed, and delivered, we are one, our thinking, growing, acting, and being rich family. A gratitude prayer. We ask enough for divine providence for more riches, but more wisdom, with which to accept and use wisely the riches we received at birth, in the form of the power to control and direct our minds to whatever end we desire.
Jennifer, that was an amazing rendition of the Definite Purpose Self-Confidence Formula. Thank you so much for that. I felt unified. I felt together as you, you know, swapped up the words a little bit to include the whole group. So I appreciate that, and I believe in you. Second here. Guys, are you grateful for Jennifer? Do you believe in her? Do you know that she has greatness inside of her and in her future? Let's let her know real quick.
We believe in you.
Okay, guys. There. I think we're all set. Mahara, shoot me a text if you cannot hear me. Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and proceed. So, guys, we are in Chapter 2. We're finishing out Chapter 2 of the book Think and Grow Rich. We are on page 31 of 235 of the ebook copy, and page 31 is the number down at the bottom of my page if maybe you have a hard copy, although it might be a different hard copy, so I don't know if that number is going to help you. But in any case, we're starting out where it says, desire outwits Mother Nature. Dr. Hill writes, as a fitting climax to this chapter, I wish to introduce one of the most unusual persons I have ever known. I first saw him 24 years ago, a few minutes after he was born. He came into the world without any physical sign of ears, and the doctor admitted when pressed for an opinion that the child might be deaf and mute for life. I challenged the doctor's opinion. I had the right to do so. I was the child's father. I too reached a decision and rendered an opinion, but I expressed the opinion silently in the secrecy of my own heart. I decided that my son would hear and speak. Nature could send me a child without ears, but nature could not induce me to accept the reality of the affliction. In my own mind, I knew that my son would hear and speak. How? I was sure there must be a way, and I knew I would find it. I thought of the words of the immortal Emerson, "The whole course of things goes to teach us faith. We need only obey." The right word, desire. More than anything else, I desired that my son should not be a deaf mute. From that desire, I never receded, not for a second. Many years previously, I had written, "Our only limitations are those we set up in our own minds." For the first time, I wondered if that statement were true. Lying on the bed in front of me was a newly born child without natural equipment of hearing. Even though he might hear and speak, he was obviously disfigured for life. Surely this was a limitation which that child had not set up in his own mind. What could I do about it? Somehow I would find a way to transplant into that child's mind my own burning desire for ways and means of conveying sound to his brain without the aid of ears. As soon as the child was old enough to cooperate, I would fill his mind so completely with the burning desire to hear that nature would, by methods of her own, translate it into physical reality. All this thinking took place in my own mind, but I spoke of it to no one. Every day I renewed a pledge I had made to myself not to accept a deaf mute for a son. As he grew older and began to take notice of things around him, we observed that he had a slight degree of hearing. When he reached the age when children usually begin talking, he made no attempt to speak, but we could tell by his actions that he could hear certain sounds slightly. That was all I wanted to know. I was convinced that if he could hear even slightly, he might develop still greater hearing capacity. Then something happened which gave me hope. It came from an entirely unexpected source. We bought a Victrola. When the child heard the music for the first time, he went into ecstasies and promptly appropriated the machine. He soon showed a preference for certain records. Among them, "It's a Long Way to Tipperary." On one occasion, he played that piece over and over for almost 2 hours, standing in front of the Victrola with his teeth clamped on the edge of the case. The significance of this self-formed habit of his did not become clear to us until years afterward, for we had never heard of the principle of bone conduction of sound at that time. Shortly after he appropriated the Victrola, I discovered that he could hear me quite clearly when I spoke with my lips touching his mastoid bone, or at the base of the brain. These discoveries placed in my possession the necessary media by which I began to translate into reality my burning desire to help my son develop hearing and speech. By that time, he was making stabs at speaking certain words. The outlook was far from encouraging. But desire backed by faith knows no such word as impossible. Having determined that he could hear the sound of my voice plainly, I began immediately to transfer to his mind the desire to hear and speak. I soon discovered that the child enjoyed bedtime stories, so I went to work creating stories designed to help him in self-reliance, imagination, and a keen desire to hear and be normal. There was one story in particular which I emphasized by giving it some new and dramatic coloring each time it was told.
It was designed to plant in his mind the thought that his affliction was not a liability, but an asset of great value. Despite the fact that all the philosophy I had examined clearly indicated that every adversity brings with it the seed of an equivalent advantage, I must confess that I had not the slightest idea how this affliction could ever become an asset. However, I continued my practice of wrapping that philosophy in bedtime stories, hoping the time would come when he would find some plan by which his handicap could be made to serve some useful purpose. Reason told me plainly that there was no adequate compensation for the lack of ears and natural hearing equipment. Desire, backed by faith, pushed reason aside and inspired me to carry on. As I analyze the experience in retrospect, I can see now that my son's faith in me had much to do with the astounding results. He did not question anything I told him. I sold him the idea that he had a distinct advantage over his brother, and that this advantage would reflect itself in many ways. For example, the teachers in school would observe that he had no ears, and because of this, they would show him special attention and treat him with extraordinary kindness. They always did. His mother saw to that by visiting the teachers and arranging with them to give the child the extra attention necessary. I sold him the idea, too, that when he became old enough to sell newspapers, his brother had already become a newspaper merchant, he would have a big advantage over his brother for the reason that people would pay him extra money for his wares, because they could see that he was a bright, industrious boy, despite the fact that he had no ears. We could notice that gradually the child's hearing was improving. Moreover, he had not the slightest tendency to be self-conscious because of his affliction. When he was about 7, he showed the first evidence that our method of servicing his mind was bearing fruit. For several months, he begged for the privilege of selling newspapers, but his mother would not give her consent. She was afraid that his deafness made it unsafe for him to go on the street alone. Finally, he took matters in his own hands. One afternoon, when he was left at home with the servants, he climbed through the kitchen window, shinnied to the ground, and set out on his own. He borrowed 6 cents in capital from the neighborhood shoemaker, invested it in papers, sold out, reinvested, and kept repeating until late in the evening. After balancing his... We found him in bed asleep, with the money tightly clenched in his hand. Crying over her son's first victory seemed so inappropriate. My reaction was the reverse. I laughed heartily, for I knew that my endeavor to plant in the child's mind an attitude of faith in himself had been successful. His mother saw in his first business venture a little deaf boy who had gone out in the streets and risked his life to earn money. I saw a brave, ambitious, self-reliant little businessman whose stock in himself had been increased 100% because he had gone into business on his own initiative and had won. The transaction pleased me because I knew that he had given evidence of a trait of resourcefulness that would go with him all through life. Later events proved this to be true. When his older brother wanted something, he would lie down on the floor, kick his feet in the air, cry for it, and get it. When the, quote, little deaf boy, close quote, wanted something, he would plan a way to earn the money, then buy it for himself. He still follows that plan. Truly, my own son has taught me that handicaps can be converted into stepping stones on which one may climb towards some worthy goal, unless they are accepted as obstacles and used as alibis. The little deaf boy went through grades, high school, and college without being able to hear his teachers, except when they shouted loudly at close range. He did not go to a school for the deaf. We would not permit him to learn the sign language. We were determined that he should live a normal life and associate with normal children. And we stood by that decision, although it cost us many heated debates with school officials. While he was in high school, he tried an electric hearing aid, but it was of no value to him, due, we believed, to a condition that was disclosed when the child was 6 by Dr. J. Gordon Wilson of Chicago, when he operated on one side of the boy's head and discovered that there was no sign of natural hearing equipment. during his last week in college, 18 years after the operation, something happened which marked the most important turning point of his life. Through what seemed to be mere chance, he came into possession of another electrical hearing device, which was sent to him on trial. He was slow about testing it due to his disappointment with a similar device. Finally, he picked the instrument up and more or less carelessly placed it on his head, hooked up the battery, and lo, as if by a stroke of magic, his lifelong desire for normal hearing became a reality. For the first time in his life, he heard practically as well as any person with normal hearing. God moves in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. Overjoyed because of the changed world which had been brought to him through his hearing device, he rushed to the telephone, called his mother, and heard her voice perfectly. The next day, he plainly heard the voices of his professors in class for the first time in his life. Previously, he could hear them only when they shouted at short range. He heard the radio. He heard the talking pictures. For the first time in his life, he could converse freely with other people without the necessity of their having to speak loudly. Truly, he had come into possession of a changed world. We had refused to accept nature's error, and by persistent desire, we had induced nature to correct that error through the only practical means available. Desire had commenced to pay dividends, but the victory was not yet complete. The boy still had to find a definite and practical way to convert his handicap into an equivalent asset. Hardly realizing the significance of what had already been accomplished, but intoxicated with the joy of his newly discovered world of sound, he wrote a letter to the manufacturer of the hearing aid, enthusiastically describing his experience. Something in his letter, something perhaps which was not written on the lines but back of them, caused the company to invite him to New York. When he arrived, he was escorted through the factory, and while talking with the chief engineer, telling him about his changed world, a hunch, an idea, or an inspiration, call it what you wish, flashed into his mind. It was this impulse of thought which converted his affliction into an asset, destined to pay dividends in both money and happiness to thousands for all time to come. The sum and substance of that impulse of thought was this. It occurred to him that he might be of help to the millions of deafened people who go through life without the benefit of hearing devices. If he could find a way to tell them the story of his changed world. Then and there, he reached a decision to devote the remainder of his life to rendering useful service to the hard of hearing. For an entire month, he carried on an intensive research during which he analyzed the entire marketing system of the manufacturer of the hearing device and created ways and means of communicating with the hard of hearing all over the world for the purpose of sharing with them his newly discovered changed world. When this was done, he put in writing a 2-year plan based upon his findings. When he presented the plan to the company, he was instantly given a position for the purpose of carrying out his ambition. Little did he dream, when he went to work, that he was destined to bring hope and practical relief to thousands of deafened people, who, without his help, would have been doomed forever to deaf mutism. Shortly after he became associated with the manufacturer of his hearing aid, he invited me to attend a class conducted by his company for the purpose of teaching deaf mutes to hear and to speak. I had never heard of such a form of education, therefore I visited the class, skeptical, but hopeful that my time would not be entirely wasted. Here I saw a demonstration which gave me a greatly enlarged vision of what I had done to arouse and keep alive in my son's mind the desire for normal hearing. I saw deaf mutes actually being taught to hear and to speak through application of the self-same principle I had used more than 20 years previously in saving my son from deaf mutism. Thus, through some strange turn of the wheel of fate, my son Blair and I have been destined to aid in correcting deaf mutism for those as yet unborn, because we are the only living human beings, as far as I know, who have established definitely the fact that deaf mutism can be corrected to the extent of restoring to normal life those who suffer with this affliction. It has been done for one, it will be done for others. There is no doubt in my mind that Blair would have been deaf and mute all his life if his mother and I had not managed to shape his mind as we did. The doctor who attended at his birth told us confidentially the child might never hear or speak. A few weeks ago, Dr. Irving Voorhees, a noted specialist on such cases, examined Blair very thoroughly. He was astounded when he learned how well my son now hears and speaks, and said his examination indicated that, theoretically, the boy should not be able to hear at all. But the lad does hear, despite the fact that the x-ray pictures show there is no opening in the skull whatsoever from where his ears should be to the brain. What I planted in his mind, the desire to hear and talk and live as a normal person, there went with that impulse some strange influence which caused nature to become bridge builder and span the gulf of silence between his brain and the outer world by some means which the keenest medical specialists have not been able to interpret. It would be sacrilege for me to even conjecture as to how nature performed this miracle. It would be unforgivable if I neglected to tell the world as much as I know of the humble part I assumed in the strange experience. It is my duty and a privilege to say I believe, and not without reason, that nothing is impossible to the person who backs desire with enduring faith. Verily, if burning desire has devious ways of transmuting itself into its physical equivalent. Blair desired normal hearing, now he has it. He was born with a handicap, which might easily have sent one with a less defined desire to the street with a bundle of pencils and a tin cup. That handicap now promises to serve as the medium by which he will render useful service to many millions of hard of hearing. Also to give him useful employment at adequate financial compensation the remainder of his life. The little, quote, white lies, close quote, I planted in his mind when he was a child by leading him to believe his affliction would become a great asset, which he could capitalize, has justified itself. Verily, there is nothing right or wrong which belief plus burning desire cannot make real. These qualities are free to everyone. In all my experience in dealing with men and women who had personal problems, I never handled a single case which more definitely demonstrates the power of desire. Authors sometimes make the mistake of writing of subjects of which they have but superficial or very elementary knowledge. It has been my good fortune to have had the privilege of testing the soundness of the power of desire through the affliction of my own son. Perhaps it was providential that the experience came as it did, for surely no one is better prepared than he to serve as an example of what happens when desire is put to the test. If Mother Nature bends to the will of desire, is it logical that mere men can defeat a burning desire? Strange and imponderable is the power of the human mind. We do not understand the method by which it uses every circumstance, every individual, every physical thing within its reach as a means of transmuting desire into its physical counterpart. Perhaps science will uncover this secret. I planted in my son's mind the desire to hear and to speak as any normal person hears and speaks. That desire has now become a reality. I planted in his mind the desire to convert his greatest handicap into his greatest asset. That desire has been realized. The modus operandi by which this astounding result was achieved is not hard to describe. It consisted of three very definite facts. First, I mixed faith with the desire for normal hearing, which I passed on to my son. Second, I communicated my desire to him in every conceivable way available through persistent, continuous effort over a period of years. And third, he believed me. As this chapter was being completed, news came of the death of Madame Schumann-Heinck. One short paragraph in the news dispatch gives the clue to this unusual woman's stupendous success as a singer. I quote the paragraph because the clue it contains is none other than desire. Early in her career, Madame Schumann-Heink visited the director of the Vienna Court Opera to have him test her voice. But he did not test it. After taking one look at the awkward and poorly dressed girl, he exclaimed, none too gently, "With such a face, and with no personality at all, how can you ever expect to succeed in opera? My good child, give up the idea. Buy a sewing machine and go to work. You can never be a singer." Never is a long time. The director of the Vienna Court Opera knew much about the technique of singing. He knew little about the power of desire when it assumes the proportion of an obsession. If he had known more of that power, he would not have made the mistake of condemning genius without giving it an opportunity. Several years ago, one of my business associates became ill. He became worse as time went on and finally was taken to the hospital for an operation. Just before he was wheeled into the operating room, I took a look at him and wondered how anyone as thin and emaciated as he could possibly go through a major operation successfully. The doctor warned me that there was little, if any, chance of my ever seeing him alive again, but that was the doctor's opinion. It was not the opinion of the patient. Just before he was wheeled away, he whispered feebly, "Do not be disturbed, Chief. I will be out of here in a few days." The attending nurse looked at me with pity, but the patient did come through safely. After it was all over, his physician said, "Nothing but his own desire to live saved him. He never would have pulled through if he had not refused to accept the possibility of death." I believe in the power of desire backed by faith, because I have seen this power lift men from lowly beginnings to places of power and wealth. I have seen it rob the grave of its victims. I have seen it serve as a medium by which men staged a comeback after having been defeated in 100 different ways. I have seen it provide my own son with a normal, happy, successful life, despite nature's having sent him into the world without ears. How can one harness and use the power of desire? This has been answered through this and the subsequent chapters of this book. The message is going out to the world at the end of the longest and perhaps the most devastating depression America has ever known. It is reasonable to presume that the message may come to the attention of many who have been wounded by the depression, those who have lost their fortunes, others who have lost their positions, and great numbers who must reorganize their plans and stage a comeback. To all these, I wish to convey the thought that all achievement, no matter what may be its nature or its purpose, must begin with an intense, burning desire for something definite. Through some strange and powerful principle of mental chemistry, which she has never divulged, nature wraps up in the impulse of strong desire that something which recognizes no such word as impossible and accepts no such reality as failure. So there, my friends, we have the closing pages of chapter 2. Lots of deep lessons to be pulled from this chapter, I believe. And I want to share just one thought, and then we'll kick off the mastermind portion of the call. You know, I have such a good time endeavoring to teach my children these lessons. And I love Chris from Atlanta. He shared, you know, how his dad induced him to study the book Think and Grow Rich through curiosity, right? Planting these little seeds of curiosity in the minds of our children. And so I do the best that I can to plant these little seeds in the minds of my children. And one of the things that I've been striving to teach them is to believe in what's possible versus looking for what's not possible. And I had them memorize a quote from the Bible that says all things are possible to them that believe. And my 7-year-old Camden, he is a critical thinker. And I love him for that. I love the fact that he questions things and wonders about things and he challenges the ideas that sometimes his dad gives him. And one of the things that he says a lot is he's like, "Yeah, Dad, but people can't fly." And I'm like, well, you know, that's what people said before the Wright brothers, and then they invented a plane. Well, yeah, Dad, but what I mean is people can't, you know, people can't fly. Like, they can't, like, you know, jump off a building and fly. And I'm like, yeah, that's right, son, that's right. You know, Napoleon Hill says at another point in his writings that, you know, anything is possible within reason. Remember him writing that, you know, somewhere, anything is possible within reason. But the thing is, we have to be very careful, I believe, when it comes to reason. In this chapter, we just read Napoleon Hill writing that his desire backed by faith pushed reason aside, right? And then this miracle was performed. So I just want to submit the thought that what is reasonable, sometimes we don't know for sure yet, because we have yet to discover all the laws of how the world works, right? Constantly, scientists are discovering new things and new ways. And so for me, I believe it's a safer bet to lean toward the side of all things are possible to them that believe, right? To lean towards that. And when someone says things are impossible to me, I always like to hold out that little thought that says, well, maybe impossible right now, but who knows whether it's going to be possible in a week, a month, a year from now, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So that's just a little thing that popped out to me. I wanted to pass that along, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts on what has stood out to you as we've just read this most fascinating story. Keep in mind, it's not a company-specific call, so please no mention of company names, system names, leader names, unless leaders are part of our mastermind community here, and brevity and relevance always appreciated in your comments. One moment, please. Star 6, who's first? Come on out.
Good morning, Paul. It's Sharon from New Jersey.
Hey, Sharon. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, family. Today in this chapter, Paul, I focused in a lot on Blair and the activity that he took when he decided to sell the newspaper. I noticed that he invested, he sold and received money, and then he reinvested, and then he kept repeating that behavior. And I, too, am also reading the book Compound Effect, and that's exactly what he was doing, repeating the same behavior so he could have success. And then, as far as his finances was concerned, he was responsible in balancing his book so he could seek that the profit. So what we were learning from Blair this morning through Napoleon Hill is his attitude of faith in himself is what gave him that extra push to go the long way with his desire. So I just focused on that today. That's my share.
I love it, and so powerful. Thank you, Sharon, for pointing that out.
Bill Moist.
Hey, Bill.
How
are you,
Paul? I'm great. I'm really good. Thank you. Good morning, family. Well, I just want to say, yes, men can fly, Paul. Have you heard about the jet? Have you heard about the jet man?
I have, actually.
He straps some little wings to his back and straps some jet engines to his back, and he jumps out of the airplane, and they got videos of him flying next to jets. And his wings aren't but maybe, I don't know, 6 feet wide. They're not very long. And so, yeah, man, it's amazing what we can do when we say, you know, when we eliminate the word can't, you know. So, any rate, back to you, Paul. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. Be blessed. Talk to you next week.
Thank you for that, Bill. I'm going to show my kids that video today. I appreciate
great.
That. Star 6, who's next? Come on out.
Hey, Paul, Larry Coates.
Larry, you're kind of faint. Are you there?
Yeah, sorry. I forgot to move my mic in place.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
You know, it's really interesting. This is a perfectly timed reading because I have just gotten a friend of mine started on this call, and he's starting to really see why I've been on this call for 4 years. And I don't know for sure if he's here today, but it's interesting because this could not be a better timed message, because this person was born with ACC. It's a condition of the colossal coliseum in brain that doesn't communicate well between the left and right half of the hemispheres of the brain. And I've gotten it to the point where he's looking at beginning the business that I'm in. And to that effect, I said, you know, we need to start writing blogs. And I said to him, I said, why don't you write one? And we looked at the size of his market. And it turns out to be that there's about 1.2 million people that have the same condition that he has. And I said to him, I said, well, why don't you start a blog discussing it? I said, I'll bet there's a lot of other people that would gain a lot from your insights and from your knowledge on it. He wrote a really wonderful blog last night and emailed it to me to review it and make comments on it. And I do have a couple of positive comments that I can add back to him to make it even a little bit better. But overall, he did a really great job. And I thought, that here's a perfect example of this boy or this young man who decided that he was going to help all these mutes around the world to get into his changed world. And boy, it's just a perfectly timed message for my friend. So I'm just really thankful that this was our reading today. Back to you, Paul.
Oh, that's awesome. Appreciate that, Larry.
Action Jackson.
Action Jackson, what's up, man? Haven't heard you in a while.
Yes, sir. I've been on the call every day just listening and taking it all in. Great morning. Thank you for Rich Family. I just want to say, man, I was listening to the reading, and I was just putting my name into those slots because, you know, two and a half months ago, I came down with an Achilles tendon injury. And while I was laying there with my, you know, on the bed of adversity and also in my garden, I was just, you know, a lot of thoughts and ideas come to me, and I'm writing them down. And like this young man just spoke before me mentioned, I created an Achilles tendon blog, and I have a community now over 500 people that come in, talk about their Achilles injury before, you know, during, even 9 or 10 months afterwards, and just the back and forth resources and back and forth discussions and dialogue about high injuries and taking pictures, and even have a Facebook post too. But I was thinking, I said, now I'm getting better, not on crutches anymore, and I'm starting to see how distractions can take, you know, can really get into your mind. I'm healing physically, but people are starting to see that, okay, he can move around more. Let's call him to do this, call him to do that. And before, when I was on crutches, when I was kind of in the house more, people was doing that, but I didn't allow those distractions or didn't allow extra things to come into my space. And so this week, I said, you know what? I got to go back and lie down in my green pastures. I got to go back, take my time, because one thing about an injury, I was thinking about Napoleon Hill's son, one thing about it, you know, it forces you to cut away the excess. It forces you to prune and to get to what's the basics, what's the core of what I have to do, what you have to do. Because, you know, it forces you to let me get back to the basics. And I said, you know, one thing about this injury, if he say, okay, I'm going to keep you like this, keep you in this walking boot from here on out, or I'm going to give you a complete 100% healing, that's what I believe in. Whatever the case is, I said, look at your life, look at your priorities, look at the core of something. It's forcing me to take my time. To look at how I can be effective in every little market that I'm in, every little sphere that I'm in, and do it from the most efficient vantage point that you can do it. And I found out in the last 2 months, a lot of time my most efficient point is sitting at my desk or lying in my bed on my computer. I'm not just lying there going to sleep, sleeping half the day away. No, I'm taking care of my leg, but I'm also taking care of my mind, my spirit, my, you know, the whole being. So I wanted to say that, you know, turn that adversity into an asset, just like Napoleon Hill's son did. Back to you, Paul.
I love that story so much. Thank you, Action Jackson. You're such a great example. That's so cool.
Veronica.
Hey, good morning. Yes.
Hi.
Good morning. Welcome.
It's Veronica, New York. I think I'm going to change my handle to NYV, New York V. But anyway, this reading today went back for me to the secret and how, I mean, as human beings, we're so full of abilities and we're so full of daily activities and thoughts and wants and likes and dislikes and things like that. It's hard to focus on one thing, but you have to believe something. And the man who was talking about his child, was that Napoleon Hill's actual child?
Yes, it was.
Okay, well, he believed something. It wasn't a cluster of things. It wasn't, I believe things in this family of thought. It was a specific thought. And I think I heard it might have been Zig Ziglar saying, don't be a wandering generality, be a something specific. It was one of his tapes that I was listening to. And I think that might be the hardest thing for us as human beings to, like, take all of these thoughts and move everything to the side in deference to a particular thought long enough to make it happen or to see it happen. But I think once you get it, then, like you said, with the 21 days, you know, you spend some time and you get that, and then you add another one, then you add another one, until all of a sudden your life is amazing. And I just think that this, now I'm going to just always see the secret after the secret after the secret every time we read, because there's just example after example of how it works. Back to you, Paul.
You're awesome, Veronica. Or should I call you NYV? I love it. Thank you for that.
Morning, Scott.
Hi, name. I didn't catch your name. I heard a bunch of people jumping out. Throw me a name.
Adriana?
Lisa Scott.
Okay, I heard Lisa Scott, and then there was another lady after Lisa Scott. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hey, good morning, Paul. Happy Freedom Friday to everybody. Just want to piggyback off of what Veronica said in terms of how difficult it can be for human beings to focus in on one thing. For me personally, it's difficult for me to focus on many things. So I just found it interesting that Veronica said that, because part of what it is that I do, or the reason that I ended up, you know, being a coach and really focusing in on clarity, is because clarity of everything, whether it's business, clarity of, you know, whatever it is that a person is going through, is because that is exactly who I am as an individual. My husband actually gets a little frustrated because I can't talk on the phone and read at the same time, or I can't look at something on the screen and listen at the same time. I have to do one or the other. I have to zoom in and focus in on what it is that I'm doing to get the most benefit out of that. I actually sometimes end up practicing, you know, or trying to do a little bit more, you know, a little of this over here, a little of that over there. It never works for me. I always have to zoom in. But I wanted to, you know, really pull out what Napoleon Hill was talking about with his son, this desire. I understand desire to that degree. And I'm just, when I think about the fact that Napoleon Hill saw that his son had no ears. So with his physical eyes, he saw this and he said, you know, for me, I see that he has no physical ears, but I do not believe that my son is not going to hear. I understand that. I mean, over and over again in my life, I've seen things physically with my eyes and with my heart, decided immediately that is not the way it's going to be. So for me, it gets a little difficult when I hear what the masses are saying about something, and I'm trying to pay attention to, okay, the masses are saying this, but I believe that. So I always bring myself back to, what do I believe? What do I think? What do I say? What do I feel? And this is what causes any type of forward momentum in my own life, because it's easier for me to focus in on one thing and go ahead and agree to desire that thing, because that's what has always assisted me to be able to move forward. So I just thank Dr. Napoleon Hill for sharing this story. And I love the name of the chapter, Desire Outwits Mother Nature, because that is true. That is truth. Back to you, Paul.
You're awesome, Lisa. Thank you for that. Powerful words.
Morning.
Hey, who's that? The second lady there.
Adriana from Queens, New York. How are you?
Hey, doing great. How are you, Adriana?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, Paul. Good morning, Think and Grow Rich fam. So excited. What a wonderful, wonderful chapter. First, I wanted to thank Amy. I don't know if she's on the call, but, you know, and I believe it was Amy, so forgive me if I didn't catch the name, but she was sweet enough to give a shout-out to myself, and I believe Veronica as well, and that meant the world to me. I just wanted to just quickly point that out. When people speak and I'm listening intently with, you know, all of the wisdom that's been put on this call, that really meant the world to me that she mentioned my name, and I thank her for that. But back to today's lesson, so powerful, so incredibly powerful. I'm actually seeing it being manifested in my life day to day. And I never really made the connection before. You know, I'm just thinking, hey, you know, here I am, you know, decided to stay home with my kids, you know, my husband's working, you know, we're just going through life and you know, I'm going forward with my business and trying to make it successful, but I never really had the foundation set in order to make all parts of my life successful. And in this reading today, it's the desire to make something happen really jumps out at me. You know, in every part of my life, whether it be in motherhood, in my relationship with my husband, in relationship in business, I realized, and even in today's reading, what my own strengths are. And him mentioning his son and the fact that he just knew that his son would hear even without having ears, without having the mechanisms to make it work, but yet pushing forward it, with a mindset that this is not accepting what, quote-unquote, you would consider a failure. So many people settle in life with whatever the adversity is. And instead of pushing through with a mindset, they seem to say, well, society says that, you know, I'm blind, I can't do this, or society says I'm deaf and I can't do that, or society says I'm too tall and I can't do this, or society says I'm too short so I can't do that. Instead of pushing through with that mindset, I thought it was very powerful. You know, when he kept mentioning that. For me, you know, I've mentioned this several times, stepping out of the box, being more vocal. You know, I threw my head in the ring in a local election here to be on a council of parents, advocates. And lo and behold, I was elected. And, you know, yesterday I was sitting at a table with the superintendent of schools for my district next to him. And he's like, here's my card and you can call me anytime or we can... You know, and it was like another mastermind there. You know what I mean? And I thought to myself, wow, as I was driving home last night, I said, wow, it's coming full circle. You know, like-minded people for a goal. Like-minded people for a goal. And it reminded me so much of the call. But, you know, not to keep it too long, but, Paul, I thank you again every day. I'm staying hungry, you know, coming every day and listening to you guys. And that's what I took from it. I hope you all have a blessed day, weekend. Thank you.
You're awesome. Just love hearing your thoughts and your voice and your excitement and your enthusiasm, Adriana. You're making such great strides, and it's just good to be with you. You're a good influence on me and the rest of the group here, so thank you for that. Let me... Star 6, who's next? Come on out.
Hi, Paul, it's Chanel.
Hey, Chanel.
Hi,
we have Chanel next. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Think and Grow Rich family. So I guess the part that stuck out to me was when he talked about the fact that, you know, he couldn't hear. There was no physical opening for him to actually be able to hear. And it reminds me of something that one of my mentors says in one of his audios, and that's simply that when you and I have a desire and we make the decision to believe that desire is possible, what happens is the universe transforms. Regardless of what's happening in the physical world, the universe aligns up with that which we desire. If we have a burning desire and we make the decision to believe that it's possible. So have an awesome day, family.
So powerful, Chanel. I believe that's true in one way or another. Thank you for sharing that. Hey, Pass, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, Think and Grow Rich family. Excuse my hoarse voice. Paul, how are you today?
I am great. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm always so blessed and highly favored. As I think about Dr. Napoleon Hill and his belief in his son, it really makes me think about my mom and her belief in me. As a young man, I did everything in my power to try to throw my life away. I did a lot of crazy, crazy things. And my mom always had this firm sense of belief that I was going to be something and I was going to be something amazing. And one time I got in some real deep trouble that could have, you know, changed my life forever. And my mom, such a wonderful woman, she decided that that wasn't going to be my life. No matter what, that wasn't going to be my life. So as I went in front of the judge said to my mom, if you think you're going to get this nigger off by bringing other niggers in here, you might as well say goodbye to your son. And my mom said, okay. So she walked out the courtroom and went through all of the people she knew that she thought believed in me. And as I went to trial for something that I did sort of nutty, my mom made sure that no black people testified. She had the head of Boys Club of America come out and testify. Two Rockefellers testified. Mr. Lou, who was the owner of the Gauchos, and one of the first billionaires in New York that invested in the black community, came and testified. And the judge, you know, asked all these people, you know, what do you think should happen to this young man? And I remember Mr. Lou saying, before you throw this young man's life away, I'm going to pay for him to go to prep school. And I'm like, you think he should go to prep school instead of going to jail? It's like, that's probably the best form of rehabilitation you can give him. And the judge asked my mom at the end of the trial, how did you get all of these white people to come when you're a welfare mom? He said, because you said I couldn't have one nigger save my son's life. So one nigger wasn't going to do it. So I laugh at that because that could have been the end of my life because I had did something so heinous, you know, not thinking, you know, and in a moment's reaction, you know, defending my mom came and defended me. Now as I go through life and I see my children and as they go through in their belief systems, you know, and when you set your mind to something, how things change, you know, the other day, I had made a promise to my mentor that I would get something, I would get all of the things that needed to get done for a celebration that we're planning for entrepreneurs. And as I was putting together the sponsorship package and doing other things, last night it was late, the kids were up, they didn't want to go to sleep, and I understood they wanted more time with dad. So I was talking to my partner, Will Rodriguez, who's usually on the call here. I'm like, I really got to put this one sheet together. He's like, no, you don't, Paz. He's like, you've already done it. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you did it months ago. He's like, let me send you the link. And I got the link. I was like, wow, I really did do this months ago. And it's one of those things, the universe does conspire when you decide that there's something that you want to do. The universe makes it happen because I was tired, wanted to play with the kids, getting a little sick as you can hear my voice. And that wasn't what I wanted to do, but I had made a decision and I had given my word that it would be done before Friday morning. And as I pulled up the one sheet and realized the only thing I had to change was one word. And that's pretty funny. So when you really want something and really desire something, what you want and desire will manifest. So never give up. Love you guys.
Joe, powerful stories, Bess. Appreciate that. Hey, Joe, good morning. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning. Real fast. Hey, good morning, family. I have to say I love you also very, 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 very much. Hey, and with Napoleon Hill's son and with the young lady, he said that, well, how he mentioned it, that there was no physical opening for hearing. And it goes back on how Paz talked about his mother. My mother's name was Mamie moon and mother and the mother learning, the repetition is the mother of learning. So I'm going to repeat this about the moon. It didn't appear that it was there, but it's always there. It, to Napoleon Hill and his wife and his son, it didn't appear until that doctor that there was an opening for hearing, but it was there. Physically, it really was there. Some things you just can't see, but they exist. And we deal with infinite intelligence. There are infinite possibilities. The possibilities never end. It's always there, whether you see it or not. It is there. And if you go on and keep on looking and you have belief and faith that it's there in your business, the way that you're going to bust your business wide open, if you can't see it, so what? Just believe that it's there and then take action and find it and keep going, because it is always there. Always. And I love you all so very, very much. Have a wonderful, 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 fantastic, super fantastic Friday and wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.
I love you, Joe Dollar, so very, very, very much. Yes, it is always there. I just want to remind everyone, think of the tree, think of the oak that sleeps in the acorn, and remember, as we go forth in life, looking around us and seeing the people, seeing the circumstances, seeing the future, all we see are possibilities, because all we see are seeds, and there are seeds everywhere. I love you guys. Have an awesome weekend. We'll see you back here tomorrow, or Monday morning on the Thinking Grow Rich call. Bye for now.
Great call, everybody. Have a great weekend, family.
Hey, my name is Paul Hutchings, and I want to thank you sincerely for listening to this week's edition of the Think and Grow Rich Call podcast. For more information on our community, to learn how you can listen to these calls daily and get the full panorama of all of the content and daily motivation and inspiration that we engage in, and to learn how you can connect with other like-minded entrepreneurs like yourself, feel free to visit our website, our home on the web at www.growrichaudios.com. Again, that's growrichaudios.com. And if you'd like to connect with me, feel free to visit my website, pipelinemoney.com. Again, that's www.pipelinemoney.com. Again, thanks for listening, and whatever you do, never give up on your dreams. Take care, and bye for now.
It's there, Elizabeth.
You are all profound. Profound believers.
Have a great weekend, you guys. You're all amazing.
Have a wonderful weekend. We have to always look at everyone and see the seeds within them. The greatness and planting to the Lord.
Ask him to that story, Rock.
You guys are amazing. I love you.
You guys are awesome. You're amazing. You're powerful.